So am I still waiting, waiting, waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review it.
Waldo's the name. London, England's the place of origin. A new face on the block. I'm going to wrestle Pistol Pez Whatley, the one and only, the legendary. Am I excited? Am I honored? You better believe it. Is he going down? I hope so. He's good, but he's been in the business a long time, and it's time for a new face to take over. Is it me? I hope so. I'm going to throw every move I know. I've been practicing. I've been trying really hard, and I'm going to get in the ring. His time is over. Maybe now it's time for a new face on the block. Me, Waldo, the one and only, at the Georgia Dome this Saturday, Tune in. Pistol Pez Whatley, the legend, with the utmost respect, I'm afraid to tell you that I think you are going down.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting here. And boy, Wei, what a weekend. Jesus, huge.
We were in Universe just a couple hours ago, and now we've raced all the way back here to the Fight Network Studios to record this edition.
I am so tired.
Yeah, I'm still really cold.
You know,
freezing.
A lot of people break our balls when we do stuff like this. But I actually consulted the advice of an actual Toronto-based comedy performer.
Really?
Who informed me that this is really funny. He listens to our podcast.
Oh, does he?
So.
Okay.
Well, Robert Hills, if anyone in the Toronto area is interested, big listener, and performs Tuesday nights at the Comedy Bar with his group Nakatomi Protocol. And he informed me that it's really funny when you talk about stuff that has not happened yet. And I take his professional opinion and go with that.
So there you go. Compliment us and receive a plug.
It's really easy to get advertising here on Review Away.
Yeah.
Just listen to us. I'm more than happy to spread the love.
Mm-hmm.
So in all honesty, everybody, you're hearing this on Monday morning. Right now it is Friday afternoon at about 5 p.m.
It's actually Thursday.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. This is not a good start. It's Thursday.
No, it's
Thursday. That'll be the follow-up. It's Thursday at 5 o'clock, so it's even worse because we haven't watched Impact yet, which we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, Wei, I woke up this morning at about 8 a.m. and realized to myself I will be up for about 41 hours straight. And because you and I, we are going to leave Toronto tonight at 2 in the morning to drive to Ottawa,
mm-hmm.
and then catch a flight from Ottawa to Nunavut at 9 in the morning. We will arrive there at about noon, 1 o'clock, something like that, and head to our hotel, and then we've got to go out and shoot stuff, and then go to the Max Pro show Friday night, get back to our hotel Friday night at whatever time it ends, and that is when we will get to sleep. That
wow.
feels so far away, and Jeez. Yet here on Monday, I don't know how we survived it.
Well, why did you wake up so early?
I had to go to work today.
Yeah, well, okay.
In the morning.
I slept in.
I had to be in early on Thursday.
Oh, you do? I slept until like about 11, so I'm not too far from you. But what about you? Can you not sleep on a plane? Do you have trouble sleeping on a plane?
I really have a hard time sleeping, especially when it's, a three-hour flight. I mean,
yeah,
what's the best case scenario is you get 3 hours of sleep. Who cares?
Well, I mean, I'll try to sleep on the ride if I don't have to drive, of course.
I am going to keep a coffee count for this weekend.
Oh, no.
To see how much I drink, as you are the one drinking coffee right now, and I'm not.
I really only drink coffee for these shows. Aside from these shows, I almost
is
never.
Is it that tough to get through?
I mean, I find that they help me give me some energy when I talk.
You and me are like the Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage of podcasts. Did you hear that story from Ultimate Warrior?
No. Oh, a cup of coffee?
Yeah. He was talking. He did his video remembering Savage, and he said how Savage always had coffee, and the two of them would have competitions to see who could have more coffee before they'd have their matches.
Oh, God.
And one time, they combined had 5 gallons of coffee before a match.
Hold on. They competed?
They would just try to one-up each other.
That's so stupid.
I don't know how far-fetched this is. 5 gallons between two men.
Well, I wonder what else they competed in.
Think of the promos and how much coffee played into them.
Just coffee?
I don't think it was just coffee, no. So
wow, that's quite the story.
You should watch that video. It's very interesting.
We're not actually competing. We wouldn't do something like that. Our promos.
Maybe that'll be Pollock versus Ting 4 or 5.
Coffee. Okay.
I would hate that because I think you drink so much that you'd hate the taste of it, and I wouldn't want to hate the taste of it.
I don't really like the taste of it now, even. But can you actually overdose on caffeine? Is it possible?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible.
Okay.
Like, there's stuff online about people who, like, caffeine addiction and drinking too much coffee can, like, result in, crashes. Yeah.
Fatality.
Like, there's, I can't remember, but, yeah, look it up on caffeine addiction. Like, it can have some serious consequences.
Well, so we will not be competing and we will not be cutting promos afterwards.
Yeah. But if we do, we'll record them.
Yep.
So everybody, a big, big review today. One that you guys have been requesting for at least a year, I would have to say.
Many people have been requesting.
Yeah, this is a big one, I guess. Louis Theroux. What's the show called?
Louis Theroux's Weird Weekends.
Weird Weekends.
On BBC Two.
So already somewhat misleading because the first thing he covered was something on a Monday.
Yes. Were you familiar with this? Obviously not.
No, not at all. I had no clue who Louis Theroux was other than I have seen people post these clips tremendously on our Facebook page.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise.
So you'd never heard of Louis before this?
I had only heard of him through the Facebook page, through people requesting this episode.
Because I saw elements of yourself in this guy, in his approach to this. But you, I found much more entertaining.
Really? Okay, we'll get to that. But no, I've never heard of the show. I didn't know what it was about. But I've seen so many people post it. And I think I had actually seen this episode prior. I'd seen this episode before. And I went on to watch some of his other episodes, too. I thought they were tremendously entertaining. But...
Yeah, he goes and talks to like just
what the show
weird
is.
Weird segments of society.
Yeah, what the show is. This was a. Oops. You're gonna hear a phone ring any second now, maybe.
Terribly unprofessional.
Oh, there we go. That's my voicemail. Sorry. What the concept of this show is, this guy, Louis Theroux, he's an Englishman, of course. I believe he's some type of journalist.
It's BBC Two.
Whether legit or not, I'm not really sure. You guys can all enlighten
us. I'll go with or not.
Okay. Well, the concept of the show is that he travels to America, not just America, but various parts of the world, and he investigates these subcultures and their episodes on
Nazis.
There's one on Thai brides. There's one on hip-hop, which I thought was hilarious. He goes to, No Limit Records, and he goes to, Cash Money, it's great. And then this one just happens to be about the subculture of professional wrestling.
And this was done in early 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So 12 years ago, was done. This is incredible. We start this off, and his focus here is basically he hooks up with WCW and a local independent called AIWF, basically hardcore indie group in North Carolina.
Yeah. So how does the show start off?
A fabulous clip where Raven and Das Wunderkind, Alex Wright, are sitting in an airport. And Louis approaches them, telling them what he's filming, a pro wrestling documentary. And then Raven asks, yeah, do you know who I am? And Louis honestly replies, no, I do not know who you are.
Well, think about what the scenario. Here's Raven and Alex Wright sitting on a bench. And they're approached by this man with a camera. So the first thing we see is Raven giving the bird double fingers to this asshole filming him on a bench. And then he eventually realizes that this guy is actually here from the BBC. And yes, a guy who knows absolutely No idea who this guy is, this weirdo. But it just sets the tone for this
Alex
type of
Wright was just happy to be on camera, I think, here.
It just sets the tone for this type of show because this is, like, the type of filmmaking that that is employed here. Guys just ambushing people. Camera is always on, hoping to get some type of reaction, and they definitely got that, and they aired that. Here we got Raven giving the finger and complaining.
Now, they go to the WCW event, which is taking place in Gainesville, Florida, for a taping of Monday Nitro. And this is where I was able to do my investigation, because he approached Roddy Piper and asked him how old he is. And Piper said, I'll be 45 in April. So I got online and figured out his birth date, and it was 1999 this was taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much it's just some really awkward exchanges backstage where Louis tries to talk to people. He speaks with Piper. Piper's the first guy that kind of gives him any bit of his time. And
Savage ignores him.
Savage comes in, and Savage was like a deer in the headlights who just froze, stared at him, and walked off with his stripper girlfriend, Stephanie Ballars.
Yeah, which is really the reaction that I think – I mean, obviously, like – John, like we're sort of familiar with doing this scenario, right? Where we found ourselves backstage.
Oh, we've had these replies from wrestlers.
At many
we
events.
Know our shit.
Exactly. At many events, and none of them would really talk to us. The difference is these guys kept the camera rolling at all times, didn't even ask, and they would air the footage.
That was the best stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think has been the worst brush-off we've gotten? There's the obvious one we've talked about, Don't Ruin the Magic, but that wasn't really so much a brush-off. It was more just a...
I don't know. We really have to dig back. There have been a number of them. I mean, Virgil, of course.
Oh, yeah. Virgil and Kamala in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
There was... The one backstage anyway. A few months ago when Junior Witter had that god-awful performance against Victor Lupo, and we wanted to talk to Junior Witter.
He didn't really brush us off, I'd say. That wasn't really brushing us off.
Well, we waited outside his locker room forever after he got yelled at by the promoter. And then he came out, said, hey, can you give us a... I went up to him, and I said, could we just get a quick minute? And he's just staring at me, or is now a bad time? He's like, it's a real bad time. And he walked off, and Way was like... Don't give them an out. Make sure they talk to you. You're the fucking television network.
No, it wasn't me that said that. It was this other guy that was there. The guy that was from the entourage of some other boxer who told you that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I got annoyed at that guy. I was like, who are you and why are you giving me notes?
All right, anyway. Louis Theroux's shtick is basically, he comes across as like this
Is he intentionally... oblivious to the topic, like in other shows, is he kind of like has no clue what's going on? Or
yeah that's sort of his character. I don't whether it's real or not, I'm not really sure, but his shtick is that he comes across as this innocent guy who just
wants
is very
to learn.
Is very curious, but the way he talks to people, it's almost mocking in tone, so you just kind of like you can't help but laugh at how ridiculous the people he emphasizes how ridiculous the people are that he's talking to without actually doing so.
He presents himself like the innocence of like a little child that just asks questions without thinking,
and at times insulting questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like with Piper, he says, you're not a real built-up guy. I mean, you're in good shape, but you're not like a big guy.
Yeah.
And Piper responds saying, I've killed men for less than that. So he got about 4 minutes out of Piper, which was 4 minutes more than he got with just about anyone else. Outside of Alex Wright, who was just happy to talk to anybody.
This was the Alex Wright one. I thought, oh, man. Here's Alex Wright, his first night debuting his new character as...
Alexander Wright, who I swear I watched every Nitro and Thunder at this point, and I never recall him debuting as Alexander Wright.
Well, we know him as Berlin, right?
Debut till September of that year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
He hadn't even started Berlin, that part, because they did... Dusty produced these promos, and they didn't even air them because they were so offensive. I don't know if offensive, but the extremely like neo-Nazi presentation for this guy, and they never aired. And it was late 99 that he came on to television as Berlin. So I never remember Alexander right.
So here was Louis Theroux talking to this man dressed up as a neo-Nazi. And it's just really funny watching someone try to explain the character of Alexander Wright to a complete layman.
I used to be a techno dancer, but the American fans, they don't get into techno.
And then Louis's like, you used to be Alex, right? What is your new name? And then Alex Wright is just like, I used to be Alex Wright. Now I am Alexander Wright. It just like conveys the ridiculousness of pro wrestling. It's so weird.
I'm not shortening shit anymore. I'm a heel.
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's like the heat is that we have to pronounce an extra syllable in his first name.
Oh god.
Oh man. Anyway.
Then he catches Bill Goldberg. Goldberg wanted no part of this at all, but he was too nice to walk away when he
was... especially with the camera on him, right? You look even worse for denying an interview, and that's what these guys know, I think.
And Louis asks him what he needs to do to become a wrestler, and Goldberg tells him to gain weight. And it's this really awkward end where he tells him to go to the power plant, and it's like he went to continue, but they cut to him just walking away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just this really awkward exchange, and Goldberg I gave him an answer. That was more than I needed to.
Yeah, and they just wanted to show Goldberg on the show, I think.
Louis was like, do you have a minute? I've got a minute.
Yeah. Anyway, couldn't be more bothered.
And what a Nitro he picked to chat about. They show highlights of Nitro, and it ends with Ric Flair being sent into an ambulance that is revealed as a mental hospital.
It was really funny because, like, you're basically getting this guy, Louis Theroux's first exposure to professional wrestling. And in the VO, they show him watching it, and in the VO, he says he's slowly realizing that the moves aren't necessarily real. And he comments that, yes, even Roddy Piper, his buddy, who had just he had just talked to, was involved in a seemingly real angle involving an ambulance, but it was revealed that the ambulance was being sent to a mental institution. So it's so ridiculous, but again, it just, man, it just like, you know, it's nice to take a look from in front of the curtain or whatever, behind the curtain, whatever, and see that this stuff is quite nuts.
And this was one of the worst WCW angles of Ric Flair going to the mental hospital. And this was really, WCW was still doing really good business at this point in early 99, but this show was collapsing week by week. This was just horrendous, the booking at this time. So
yeah.
He picked a great time, and you got to love how WCW were completely happy with the fact that this guy could use whatever footage he wanted of WCW, as he pretty much mocked the product.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
whatever exposure you can give us.
I imagine the name BBC carries a lot of credibility with it towards WCW, and they probably let him do anything they wanted.
Then we shift over. Afterwards, they are they're basically striking the ring set, and it's here that he talks to Dwayne Bruce. Sarge, who was a part of the power plant at the time, and if you recall, actually got a pay-per-view match teaming with Bill Goldberg in early 2001. Louis asked him a bunch of questions, and then I missed it, but he asked him some question, I guess, just about the wrestlers really getting hurt or something like that, and Sarge basically blew him off and said, I have a job I got to do, and go fuck off.
It just looks like he was really annoyed because Sarge was in the middle of tearing down the ring, and here's this guy.
Yeah, he had to get to the next town the next night for Thunder.
Here's this idiot just, you know, coming around with his camera asking him stupid questions like that. So they go from the extravaganza of WCW to...
AIWF wrestling.
Yeah. The way they connect the two is like in a VO, Louis says... from the WCW, we travel to a North Carolina promotion called the AIWF, who also have their own TV show. and they show clips.
It's like cable access.
Yeah, they basically like set it up like, you know, here's a rival of WCW's. And it's just like this thing based out of this dude's house.
It was Rick Diesel. and his sidekick, Brian Danzig, who I had heard of these two
guys. Oh, you have?
By name.
Really?
But I had never put faces to these names.
Wow.
Yeah, like Rick Diesel's, he's got to be at least like 50 or so now.
Jesus.
I actually found these two guys on Facebook while I was watching this, but we didn't have enough time to make any contacts to get anyone on this show, but maybe another day, everybody. Mm-hmm. And both are still working, if you're curious, 12 years later. And basically, this is Rick Diesel's promotion, and his co-owner is Brian Danzig, and they just basically, they don't sugarcoat anything. They are hardcore wrestling, and their goal is to be the most violent independent company in the country.
Like, it's their virtue, is to, they build themselves as the most extreme wrestling federation in America.
They go to this radio appearance where they're promoting their upcoming show. And the woman, like, has no clue what's going on about wrestling. But these guys are extremely open and welcoming to Louis and explain to him what storylines are.
Yeah.
And Louis asks Brian Danzig, as you're coming up in the ranks, do you eventually want to go work for someone like WCW? And Brian says, no, I don't.
No, I don't. I don't get as much.
This is it. This is it for me.
I don't get as much freedom, you know. I much prefer wrestling in front of 40 people.
I want to be my own monster. They would control the monster.
I much prefer to make no money than to make any money. At the radio station, as they're promoting it, Louis eventually grabs the mic and he's like, yes, you're going to see the most extreme show, the most violent. You're going to see people lit on fire. You're going to see a lot of blood, basically like mocking how extreme this stuff is in front of
and
this guy, Rick Diesel.
Diesel's just nodding his head.
Yeah, you're going to see all that.
They let Louis run the ropes, and I still think Louis was better than Kelly Kelly running the ropes here for his first time ever.
Yeah.
And then we go on location to Express Lube, where Major Havoc, real name Jody, he works a day job, and
he's one of the AIWF's star wrestlers. Basically, like, again, like mocking the star level of these guys. Here's your biggest star.
Works at Express Lube.
Express Lube. And what does Jody Rushbrook show him?
Louis is just sent there blindly. Just go there and ask for Jody.
And by the way, I'm positive that none of these guys had any forewarning that this
dude was
coming.
No, I don't think any of this was bullshit. I thought this was all legit.
Oh, what I mean is, like, it's not like, you know, like when we would organize an interview, we would, like, call and tell people that we would be coming. Meanwhile, this Jody character, they probably just showed up with the camera.
I meant in the sense that maybe they just staged this, that he was just randomly showing up at these places. Yeah, I fully believed he was randomly showing up here. And he meets Jody, takes him away from work, gets him to do his gimmick laugh for everybody. This was so weird to see this grown man who says he has a wife and kids, and he's pursuing this dream as Major Havoc.
And so he takes Louis down to the basement of the garage, and Louis asks him to show what type of what he can expect to see at the AIWF. And so, like, Jody starts taking this, like, metal sheet, like a large metal, almost like a desk drawer plate, and he starts smashing it over his head, and like, it just looks so stupid, you know, when you're looking at this from the perspective of some British journalist who knows nothing about wrestling. Suddenly, here's this man in the garage of an Express Lube hitting himself over the head with a metal sheet. And so eventually Louis tries it himself, and it doesn't end up well. But then he eventually asks the question, why would you want to even do that to Jody? And it's really the golden question that should be asked to any wrestler. Why would you want to do that?
Well, then we go to the AIWF's big show, and we're backstage in some banquet lobby where it is transformed into their dressing room. And my goodness, I have never seen a locker room like this before.
Me neither.
I can guarantee you, folks, there was no drug use in AIWF wrestling. These were natural bodies. Every, like, cliche you could imagine for an indie show. Guys wearing WWF merchandise, like an Austin 316 shirt.
Yeah.
Armor with plastic swords.
They had this group called, like, Weird Ink.
Weird Ink.
Something like that. And like they looked like people.
They looked like some weird like S&M oddities. Concoction.
Never mind. I was gonna say. I don't want to offend anybody, but they looked like people that handicapped in some ways.
That's better than the word you almost said a few weeks ago.
Okay. And then we focus on Brian Danzig, the guy that we had met before.
Yes, and he basically does his gimmicked up look with like this goth look where he's got the black hair slicked back and black and white, almost like Jeff Hardy face paint.
Yeah.
Sort of all over where he plays this goth. Yeah. This hardcore goth character.
It comes across as like a really creepy dude because like he's really soft spoken and
hey, he's a very calm dude.
He's really like getting into his zone, listening to music, and Louis in contrast is like this really clean cut, tall, lanky British guy who just by simply standing next to these people, it really emphasizes how different some of these guys are.
And we get some highlights of the show. And
dude, Brian's match features a barbed wire chair and tons of shots to the head with like various weapons.
In front of a packed crowd of like 30.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Rick Diesel gives a big Paul Heyman speech. This was not before Barely Legal said, "We've got a popping crowd out there. Yeah. They're ready to pop.
Yeah.
So let's give them a show, everybody." Mm-hmm. And this is the depressing part of pro wrestling, watching stuff like this.
Well, I mean, there are people that are willing to do this.
Guys killing themselves in front of nobody for nothing.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are people willing to do this in front of just their friends, like a group of five of their friends, I'm sure.
Good for them. And then we also, Rick is mentioning their upcoming show, Extreme Content, where it will be all grudge matches, and the goal of the show is to be as violent as they possibly can be.
Uh-huh,
so that's
right.
Coming up.
That's coming up. They check up on Brian backstage, and a part that really stood out to me was, first of all, Louis asks if he's okay, because Louis is really concerned. That looked like it really hurt. And Brian's just like, no, that was fine. I cut myself on the forehead, and I just bled, and now I'm fine. And then Louis's like, so what are you going to do now? Are you going to grab a bite to eat? And then,
the Waffle House.
And then Louis asks, what are you going to eat? And then this guy with makeup and blood streaming down his face, who had just fallen through a barbed wire table, says, ham and cheese omelet. It's just like, it's so funny watching this man who had just gone through all this crazy shit talking about a ham and cheese omelet. That's the type of humor that I find the show to feature. I think it's very funny.
And then we head over to the WCW Power Plant, where he had an open invitation. And this is where we met Pistol Pez Whatley.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis comes in and starts talking to this man. He has no idea who he is. Pez Whatley, a guy who goes way back, working in the Carolinas. He worked Florida, worked with the Sheik in Detroit, did Toronto a lot. Uh-huh. Pretty well-known guy who never a giant name, but definitely had some big matches in his career. And this point, he had been working in WCW as like a undercard wrestler when they needed somebody in a big battle royal. But at this point was an assistant here at the Power Plant, and he was great here.
Yeah, he was tremendous.
He's teaching promos to Alan Funk and Hardbody Harrison. Now, Hardbody Harrison is the guy that was part of the group that sued WCW for racial discrimination, and himself is in prison now, probably for the rest of his life, for charges of basically holding these women slaves in his basement.
What?
Yeah, type it up right now, Hardbody Harrison on Google, and see
God
what you
damn.
Find. Alan Funk would come up to WCW in 2000 as Kwee Wee, who you might remember, and then later did a ripoff of Hulk Hogan on the Independence, which we've reviewed in the past.
Yeah.
And they're both given time to cut promos, and they got to cut 60-second promos, and Alan Funk did the most stereotypical pro wrestling yelling promo you've ever seen.
Next Saturday, April 24th, Georgia Dome, Hardbody Harrison. Last week down in Florida, you interfered in my business. I had Prince Iaukea, 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ring. Hardbody Harrison, you came up, give me a cheat shot. Now I'm tired of you, son. I'm going to take you next Saturday, the 24th of April this month. And when I meet you face-to-face, Hardbody, you better be scared, punk, because I'm going to rip your teeth out, and I'm gonna knock your head off. I'm tired of you, Hardbody Harrison. You think you're going to hit me in the back of the head this time? It's not going to happen, boy. I'm going to rip your head off.
I thought you was on your hand.
Five. It was close, though. Yeah, he was close. Yeah, we narrowed it down to 4 seconds.
He's short by 5 seconds. And
just
then,
like, he just goes spastic and he...
Yeah, just yells and yells.
Yells at the top of his lungs. He's like basically cutting a promo trying to see who could yell the loudest. And that was him.
It was pretty old by 10 seconds in, and then he had another 50. Harrison was even worse. He was just terrible. Mm-hmm. And with 30 seconds left, he just stopped and walked off. Hardbody Harrison was a terrible, terrible worker.
Sure. And then Pez...
From what I recall.
Pez basically... gives insight, tremendous insight, I found, into what these guys did wrong. This was the section that I thought legitimizes the skill in promo cutting, because, you know, if you're just watching, you're watching this guy Alan Funk cut this stupid promo, and you're thinking, what is so hard about this? It's just these muscle heads yelling into the camera as loud as they can. But then Pez basically goes into, you know, what you did wrong, like. He tells him, you know, you overshot yourself, Alan. You know, what if you had to cut a 2-minute promo? You would have died by the time you hit a minute. And so Pez cuts his own promo and just did really well, did really, really good. Showed his character, told the time, told the date, told everything, and eventually just gets applause from everybody in the audience.
What happens is that after you think of one thing to say about the guy, then you ain't got nothing else. You see what I'm saying? Now, you recapped a little story about, yeah, you thought that I interfered in your match, but you had it good when you told him what it was. You just couldn't handle Prince Iaukea on that night. You wasn't the man that you needed to be that night. But I'm going to tell you what, when you come down to the Georgia Dome, that's right, I said the Georgia Dome, on the 24th, I'm going to be ready for you. And I'm going to show you something that Prince Iaukea didn't show you. I'm going to take one of these neck bones over here. I'm going to take this chitlin bean over here, and I'm going to stuff it right down your neck. I'm going to tell you, Awesome Allen, you're going to think that you is mad. You is crazy. You ain't seen nothing yet. You wait till you get a hold to me. You wait till Hardbody comes down there and straighten you out at the Georgia Dome. Suck.
So Watley came across as the most likable guy you have ever met. Like,
yes.
Someone that just would... This guy, Louie, just walks in and he's embraced by Pistol Pez Watley. Just brings him right in, gives him all this access, cut this awesome promo. And yeah, he taught them how you always have to reiterate over and over why you're fighting, when you're fighting, and who you're fighting. So always hammer home the venue and the date and why you're fighting this guy. Yeah. Why should we care?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, kind of the basics of any solid promo. And because this was early 99, we actually got to see some guys in the power plant that would eventually make it up to WCW. We saw Chuck Palumbo, Sean O'Hara, Elix Skipper, Kid Romeo, as we mentioned, Alan Funk, all these guys who were there in the power plant at the time.
Yeah. Before Louis then cut his own promo.
As his character Waldo.
Waldo, and this was really funny. But he actually does pretty well.
Really?
Yeah. He hit all the necessary points. He definitely did better than Hardbody Harrison or Alan Funk, okay?
I agree. But
absolutely.
It was still a very awkward promo.
Well, he was playing a character. He was
with all due respect, I respect you very much, but I'm going to come down to the Georgia Dome. We're going to have a match. And in this match, I'm going to prove that my skills are just a little bit more than yours because you're a legend, with all due respect.
Am I going to win? I'm not sure. I hope so.
But I agree. It was better.
Anything
was better than Hardbody Harrison.
It was very funny. And I thought, and Pez Watley thought so as well. He said, you know, you're already a very well-spoken guy, and you did pretty good. That was pretty good.
Am I going to win? I don't know. And then we went into this. This is where I called bullshit and thought this whole stuff was staged.
I did too. This part to me, it felt very scripted by the producers.
Yeah, they based it that Dwayne Bruce was upset at Louis over that.
Sarge.
Over Louis' question that he asked him at Nitro after the tapings. So Bruce puts him through the ringer here, and basically Louis wants to quit. He goes to the back area. Sarge pulls him back out. He goes to puke outside, and they basically just break this guy down and kill him, which was actually typical of the power plant and how they broke guys. And
they sit Louis at one point in front of a wall, and they just yell at him.
he has to sit on a bucket facing the wall. I thought this was all really lame.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's no different than what they do on Tough Enough, you know. But
this
yeah.
just came across so...
kind of hokey, really. Sure.
After you did this really cool stuff with the promo stuff, I really enjoyed that.
I agree.
Then you had to go the gimmicky route at the end of this show.
Yeah, I agree.
And the special finishes off with Louis going back to meet up with the AWF guys in the parking lot of their house. And
well, before you head on, like, Louis sums up the training at the power plant by basically saying what stood out to him about his experience at the power plant was how undervalued wrestlers felt they were and how far they'd go to prove their point. And this is something that I've actually noticed, like, in my entire time following professional wrestling. It's something that you notice from watching Tough Enough is, like, wrestlers really feel like they are undervalued in mainstream, in the mainstream eye. And to me, all that stuff about like Bill DeMott, for instance, all that hard training on you see on Tough Enough, to me is like a further extension of this. How much of these stupid workouts, jumping off the ropes, will ever play a part in a professional wrestling match? Maybe never. But they want, for whatever reason, to show that wrestlers are the most athletic people, and somehow that would legitimize their sport.
Yeah, that was a real interesting part where he's driving away and kind of reflecting on this whole thing and kind of the insecurity that a lot of wrestlers mm-hmm. have about their industry and proving to outsiders that they are just as capable and dedicated athletes as anybody else mm-hmm. in whatever sport. So that stuff was interesting. And then he talks with the AIWF guys, recounts his WCW power plant experience, and they basically talk about an incident that recently happened with some barbed wire that they got on sale
at a
wholesaler, and it was a real thick barbed wire, and it resulted in some guy getting slashed in the face and needing stitches. So Louis naturally says, so you won't be using this anymore. He's like, well, look how much of it I bought. We got to keep using it.
We got it on sale, you know. how casually this Rick Diesel talks about this barbed wire incident is really
guy
telling.
Guy got stitched in the face.
I know. Oh, I got the barbs too long. I'm sorry. It's like saying I got the wrong size cups for the party. I got the barbs too long. Well, we'll still use it. It was on sale. Yeah,
I was freaking out. I thought it was just shredded.
He had a gash probably this long mm-hmm. and about that wide down the side of his cheek, and then another one on his neck. So he got messed up pretty bad. They had to take him get stitches. I haven't heard exactly how many stitches it took yet, but he was messed up pretty bad.
Yeah, these things happen, you know. And, you know, Tony understands that.
But is that just sort of one of the hazards of doing what you do then, basically? I mean, does that make you pause and think, like, oh, dear, maybe we should reassess, or do you know what I mean?
Actually, I'd done that for the first time last night.
Really?
For a minute, I was like, God, we've went too far this time. And but then I heard Tony going, why can't I go back out and do more?
He's like, man, I messed it up.
I said, no, you're sitting with your face ripped half open. Let's just calm down. Don't worry so much about the match, and let's worry about you.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that made it a little crazier, we went out and bought a whole spool of new barbed wire last night. It was on sale, and this was my fault, Brian. I was the one that got the barbed wire. I got them with the barbs too long.
Did you?
This is like the sharpest barbed wire I've ever worked in.
Really?
Yeah.
You gonna not use that barbed wire again, or what?
Oh, goodness, we got a whole spool back in there. It's big. We'll use it again. We'll just use it in moderation.
Right.
You know, we won't wrap people's arms in it. We may staple it to a big board and use it as a bed of barbed wire or something like that. Something we can control.
These guys are great. Oh, Rick funny. Diesel and Brian Danzig. And that brought us an end to Louis Theroux's weird weekend.
Yeah,
focusing on pro wrestling.
The closing line of the show comes from this Brian, the same guy who's going to the Waffle House with the goth look. Louis questions, you know, why do these guys still do it? And Brian says, it's weird, but it's something I like to do. And I guess that's something why we all feel, you know, even as wrestling fans. Why do we watch it? It's weird, but we like it. It's still something we like.
I'm a hardcore wrestler. That's what I am.
Exactly.
So there you go, everybody. That was your long-awaited review of Louis Theroux's Weird Weekend. Overall, what did you think of this?
I really enjoyed the show. I mean, it's to me, like, this is my favorite type of humor. It's humor that's based in reality, humor that you grab from real situations, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very enlightening to take a step back and just think about how ridiculous this all is. Like, we get so upset about the minutiae of you know, storylines and, you know, whether or not something looks real. But then, like, think about it from an outsider's perspective. How much of it... It really matters, you know? Like, none of it is really that big of a deal when you when you think about it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was like, it was 45 minutes. It was, you had some funny characters in there. Mainly my only complaint was, the stuff with at the power plant with Sarge. I thought that came off a little lame. And I think anything longer than 45 minutes and I would have been, a little bored with this guy, Louis Theroux.
Sure.
That was my own opinions.
Yeah. I mean, I think this type of humor, you might be a fan of it or you might not. Some people, like, I speak for myself because, like, I used to host a show that was sort of similar to this in tone, you know. And anytime you go in playing a character, like, similar to, like, Ali G and whatnot, it can come off a little mean and condescending. But, it's all for fun. It's just all for entertainment. And so I certainly got a lot of laughs out of this.
Let's go into the feedback way, because we got a bunch of it on this on Louis Theroux. We'll start off with Mark Webb. I saw this originally when it was showing over here on BBC Two. It's a story of how you shouldn't give up on your dreams, but it's also a story of how you shouldn't kill yourself getting there.
Interesting. Stephen Smith, I've never liked Louis Theroux. Weird Weekends is basically all about saying, look how stupid this subculture is, but being subtle about it.
I didn't think he came across overtly mocking pro wrestling. I mean, in certain respects he did, and certain parts you almost have to side with the guy when you look at some of this stuff as being, why would you do this? And that's a very valid question.
Yeah, and like... I definitely, I mean, the show is called Louis Theroux's Weird Weekend, so, you know, they do play up how weird it is, but they also reveal a lot of worthy things about pro wrestling, like positive things about pro wrestling. He definitely put over the fact that despite there being storylines, what these guys were real athletes. What they were doing is all very real. You know, if you really look at it, like, it conveyed the idea that pro wrestling really is about storytelling. Cutting a promo is all about storytelling.
Carlo Rossi. Sarge comes off as a dick. Why anyone would want to be a jerk when promoting their product is beyond me. Goes to show why Sarge never really went anywhere. I thought the chick at the radio station was MILF-tastic. The indie guys were interesting. It's cool to see the how and why of small indie leagues that exist and the passion that they put forward to entertain. All in all, it's funny how the old guards still try to kayfabe it and how the indie guys were all about showing how the product has worked. Seems like they were entertainment before WWE ever was.
Ryan Daniels, having just seen this for the first time, it wasn't outright bad, but left a lot to be desired. I couldn't help but roll my eyes at Danzig and some of the other guys from the AIWF having brutal hardcore matches for the hell of it, with seemingly no plans to advance further in the business, and in essence, scaring and damaging their bodies for nothing. Don't know who the black trainer was at the power plant or how qualified he'd have been to be training either, but... it was interesting seeing Palumbo and Primetime Elix Skipper make cameo appearances. Sarge came off somewhat like a hard ass, and while he was trying to protect the business and instill respect in Louis, It seemed almost criminal when he wouldn't let him quit after a while, despite Louis being under no obligation to continue like the other students. The best part of the whole thing occurred within the first 30 seconds when Raven asked Louis if he knew who he was, and when struck for an answer, asked him, "Didn't you do a little research before starting this endeavor?" and received a glib "no," which seemed to sum up the whole episode.
Yeah, as we said, I wouldn't take too much stock into that scene with Sarge. And
I wouldn't either. And about the lack of research, that's what this show is. It's like it's taking a guy who's a complete novice to this thing and, you know, watching him discover it as the viewer is discovering it.
Chris Woodcock, I think that the reaction to Sarge to Louis' question about the matches being predetermined was pathetic. Here is a guy who is giving props to Sarge for the athletic and skillful side of pro wrestling and wants to understand how the show is put together, and guys act like the guy acts like a supreme douche. I hate that Sarge dude. How many great talents did we miss out on because a fresh-faced rookie couldn't take his American frat house bullshit?
What is your personal opinion on, you know, this type of training?
I've never been a fan of the military approach to weeding out guys. I think absolutely you do. You know, there's lots of talent who can't get through a workout like that can contribute significantly to the business. You know, you don't have to be a guy that can do 500 squats to be a contributor to professional wrestling. I mean, you obviously have to be in shape, but I've never been a big fan of that style of, well, we're going to break guys and see who will last. And that was the notorious rep the Power Plant got for weeding out guys and sending them to other companies because the Power Plant had such a high standard of where you had to be and survive this drill sergeant mentality.
Glenn Goddard. Hey guys, just finished Review Raw and thought I would let you know about the Tough Enough final. I was lucky to meet Stone Cold Steve Austin while in Atlanta this year for Mania, thanks to his agent, Dallas. And we were told that the plan for the final two is for the final two to go one-on-one in a match live on Raw. He also told us that they were in negotiations for a second series, and they were very confident in getting one. Would like to say that Austin was a really cool guy considering he was nursing a hangover from the Mania after-show party the night before. He also thanked us for watching his bullshit movies, which was a really funny moment. Also, just a quick note with regard to CM Punk's comment that he lost the tag match because he had a 120-degree temperature. Could this be a subtle hint that he has got heat backstage? Maybe not, but with Punk, you never know. Could be. That's an interesting little tidbit if it's true for the Tough Enough final.
Yeah, I was always of the impression it was going to be three on Tough Enough, but it would make sense logically that you'd have one more elimination this Monday and get it down to two.
What do you think of the idea of having a match between these two finalists live on TV? That's a lot of pressure for these guys.
That's a ton of pressure.
A lot could go wrong.
Yeah, especially if it's a mess. I mean, that's kind of what the guy is going to be remembered for. If it's a giant, but spot, like, especially if you were to put Cole in there, where,
and also, like, you know, consider that what these shows are quite different in their comfort with kayfabe. I mean, one show is completely kayfabe free, the other is a kayfabe show. Like, how are you gonna select a winner based on, let's say, Luke wins the match, but Jeremiah puts on the better match.
Yeah.
Well, how are you going to explain to the audience that doesn't watch Tough Enough that
really
Jeremiah wins?
It really doesn't fit into the context of Raw to have this match and then announce a winner. Where,
I love the idea, though. I love, you know, having this final match to determine who puts on the best performance. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how they do it.
Matt Bouchard, John and Way, you have never heard of James Rodet? A bit disappointing. Do you even get Psych up in Canada? It's a quality program. You should check it out at least once and see if you like it. By the way, James Rodet did not host Raw. His co-star, Dule Hill, did. For whatever reason, Rodet didn't show up except for a phone call at one point during the show. I don't believe we get Psych up here in Canada. I am not in a hurry to find out more about James Rodet. Nor do I care if he was on Raw or not.
Yeah.
But a great contribution to Tough Enough.
James Rodet, yes, yeah. Sure. Unforgettable appearance. Chris Charlton. I've been to four or five Hustle shows, including HG's debut. There was a lot of silly stuff there, but the occasional really good match. It was a good palate cleanser from what I call the strong style dick waving that other promotions are overly keen on. The strong style dick waving.
And he was referencing hard gay there. But we've got to review a Hustle show some week.
So I would love to.
Thulani writes in, I just listened to Review Away, and I completely agree with John that the wrestlers from the pre-Attitude Era were more iconic than any other wrestlers since. It's got little to do with the 80s WWF popularity, in my opinion, because even Brett, Razor Ramon, Lex Luger, and Shawn are still household names. I think the main reason is because during the Attitude Era, Vince basically confirmed in mainstream media that wrestling was fake and pro wrestling lost its aura and truly became entertainment and no longer a pseudo-sport. Well, Vince actually went to the New Jersey Commission in 1989 and admitted full out that wrestling was predetermined and it was extremely well known. So it was not like Vince went public with that fact 10 years later. It was 1989 for getting our dates together.
Yeah. You bring up a good point. You know, like now that I do think about it, you know, there are names like Razor Ramon and Lex Luger that, you know, when you think about it, the business wasn't that great at that time. Yet everybody still remembers these names. At least people our age, right? People still remember Diesel. People still remember the 1-2-3 Kid. Even
I don't know if you could say that to the level of some of those top 80s guys. I think they were just seen by so many more people.
Sure.
Certainly people, I think, remember some of these names, but I just...
But what I mean is...
Put it this way, and I know this sounds very macabre, but if Scott Hall died tomorrow, I don't see a fraction of the coverage Randy Savage got.
Well, Scott Hall's not on the level of... I was more referring to the undercard, the stars of the era. Like, I guess when you think about it, do you remember... is a Razor Ramon more fondly remembered than, say, a D'Lo Brown, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so I just find it personally interesting that, you know, despite the lack of eyeballs on the product at the time, somebody like Scott Hall is still...
I think Scott Hall is... I don't know if that's the best
example. Scott Hall's a bad example.
Because he, to me, as much as some might remember his Razor Ramon character, I mean, he was a huge part of the Monday Night Wars when you had a giant audience of, you know, 13 million between those two shows watching.
Okay. Well, Doink, for instance. How about Doink the Clown? There are people, you know, still fondly remember Doink the Clown, perhaps more so than D'Lo Brown, at a time when more people were probably seeing D'Lo Brown.
They might know the name, but I don't think it holds any value to your childhood outside of, you know, maybe in passing it's a name you recall. I don't know, it's hard to weigh these things. It's all in, you know, different people's perspectives on things. I was really blown away by just how big the Randy Savage thing was, just because it was like, wrestling fan or non-wrestling fan, that was a giant name that people were aware of, and it was because of numerous factors. Murphy,
where me? Murphy Shackelford, I just watched the Raw Macho Man tribute again, and all in all, I still can't believe I won't ever see Macho Man live back in the WWE, that I won't hear the gigantic pop from the crowd when his theme song is played, and Randy stepping out onto the ramp. If it wasn't for the fact that it's real and it did happen, and I'm quite sure I'm not sleeping, I would still have hope of seeing Savage back in the ring, twirling his finger and screaming, "Ooh, yeah."
All right. So
he's one day, maybe.
If it. Okay.
I don't know. That was weird.
Brian Manalik, do you guys think that maybe the WWE didn't do an all out tribute show because they wanted to learn more about the Macho Man's death and avoid a scenario like Benoit's? Your thoughts? I was completely confused by this.
I think he's referring to, you know, all the rumors, right? All the rumors of Macho's past with Stephanie and whatnot.
Well,
but no, but I, not that it has anything to do with it. They don't do tribute shows for people that aren't on the roster anyway.
And we'll end off with
Padrage Dude. Not sure what you guys can add to the Louis Theroux episode, but Sarge makes me delighted that the power plant failed so much. He's not Dixie Carter's wife, is he?
No, that is Serge. Sarge was a nickname. Anyway, so that's going to wrap up our feedback, everybody, and our show for this week. Me and Wei are
off to Nunavut, but don't worry, we're back by the time you're listening to this. And Wei, as we end off here, looking ahead to next week, I just finished reading the bio that Dave Meltzer put together on Randy Savage. It's a fantastic read. I recommend everyone going to check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. And in it, he spoke to Bret Hart, and Bret mentioned how he only had two singles matches with Savage his entire time in the WWF, and they never got to put together the match they truly wanted because of certain agents wanting something different, and they were never able to have that big singles match. Well, in WCW, they did have one pay-per-view singles match together, and granted, this was significantly past the prime of Randy Savage and... This was May of 1998 at the Slamboree event, and it's headlined by Bret Hart against Randy Savage, and also highlighted by Eric Bischoff challenging Vince McMahon to come fight him at Slamboree.
Wow.
So I thought we would take a look at that next week, Wei.
Very impressive. Very nice. I'm looking forward to that.
And, of course, you can leave all your feedback and... whatever notes you have at reviewaway.com or facebook.com/reviewaway. We're going to be back on Tuesday with Review Raw, and our special guest, Wei, rapper Melly Mel, is going to be joining us to chat about the Urban Wrestling Federation that debuts this Friday with a pay-per-view taping, First Blood, in Manhattan, New York. It's Street Fighter meets ECW.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And why don't we end this podcast with a preview of the voice of Melly Mel. Let's go out with a classic from The Furious Five. This is White Lines. Don't do it.
Bass. Baby.